It was not long ago we marked the anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. And that same day, as the news spread, it hit Indianapolis, where Bobby Kennedy was set to address a crowd, and he had a few words to say.
I'll be sitting when the evening comes.
April the 4th, 1968, civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. is shot to death as he stands on a balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. The killing sparked a wave of riots across the United States, but not in Indianapolis, Indiana, where Robert F. Kennedy was campaigning for president and made the announcement to a stunned crowd.
I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man.
Bobby Kennedy that night, his speech often credited with keeping people calm and no rioting, reported around Indianapolis that night. That was off the cuff. That was extemporaneous. But an awful lot of his speeches were very carefully prepared. And that is the subject of RFK, His Words for Our Times, a book that has been edited and is introduced by Edward Guthman and our next guest, C. Richard Allen. We call him Rick Allen. Rick Allen is, among other things, a media and technology executive, former deputy assistant to President Bill Clinton, helping to create AmeriCorps. And he is tweeting at C. Richard Allen and joins us now. Rick, welcome. Thank you for being here today.
Tim, it's a great, great pleasure to be with you. I think of myself as a longtime listener, first-time guest. So.
Oh, well, wonderful. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Let's see if we can make it worth your while. Why the interest in Bobby Kennedy, aside from the fact that we are nearly upon the 50th anniversary of his passing, his being assassinated?
Well, that's obviously a principal reason. Americans tend to think of history when we hit these big milestones. But for me, over the course of the last year, rereading so many of Kennedy's words, I've really been struck by how relevant and beautiful they are. And I felt strongly that they can help us in a time which is really as fractured and painful as those years were in 1968. And that it is important for Americans to have the chance to learn about Robert Kennedy directly from the source, his public remarks. And that's what the book provides with the contextual narrative weave around those excerpts. And then I guess last, Robert Kennedy's been a hero of mine essentially all my life. And with three kids of my own now and a two-year-old grandchild, it drives home for me the difference between our current times and how we felt about our prospects when Kennedy was alive. When I was a kid, I had no doubt that I was going to live a better life than my parents and that I'd leave to my children a better world. And I'm not any longer certain that that's the case, and I think that's a common worry for Americans. Robert Kennedy gives us a vision, the language, really even the policies, to find our way forward. So it's an opportunity not to indulge in nostalgia, but to use as a catalyst for action.
In addition to the speeches, as you mentioned, excerpts, including the one I played a little bit of, the one in Indianapolis, you have some comments from individuals like Peggy Noonan. You have this one 2017 Pulitzer Prize for commentary winner. And she said that Bobby Kennedy brought a level of passion to politics that the arena hasn't seen since he died. He believed in belief and he had soul. He knew poems and he could recite them. I kind of wonder, the word I come up with, I think, when as I'm reading your descriptions of Bobby Kennedy and some of these speechwriting moments, if you will, is intensity.
He was a very intense person, and I think intensity was a common thread throughout his life, even when public speaking wasn't. He was very intense as we first saw him as Americans in the 1950s as part of the Senate Select Investigative Committee, really diving into organized crime and corrupt labor unions. That intensity led to a reputation for ruthlessness. And I think over time, and particularly after the death of his brother, Robert Kennedy was significantly changed by that tragedy and his experiences, and his levels of empathy, which had always been really high, came out regularly and persuasively. And that's part of why he was so powerful that night in Indianapolis, as you say, in completely extemporaneous remarks. And frankly, at a what was to have been a political rally, and you can tell that the crowd did not know the news that Dr. King had been shot and had died. And so it was completely shocking. And indeed, he had been warned by the mayor of Indianapolis and by the police chief not to go to that site. They told him they couldn't guarantee his safety, and they withdrew police protection.
The Bobby Kennedy that you describe also is a Bobby Kennedy who was a writer before he was a speaker. In fact, he was not really that comfortable delivering speeches early on, right? He had to work on it.
Absolutely. And it was something that really throughout his life, even during the presidential campaign in 68, when he was speaking many times a day, it was clear he was still uncomfortable speaking in public and was nervous. But he forced himself to excel at it because it was required of what he was doing, which was running for president.
Once again, we are speaking with Rick Allen. He is one of the co-editors, if you will, of RFK, His Words for Our Times. I find it interesting in the context, as you say, part of this is to bring context. And I was looking at this one speech, An Initial Warning Against a Widening War. And let's face it, the Vietnam War was a key issue in the 1968 election, and there were people who wondered, well, if John F. Kennedy had lived, would the war have continued? Where was Bobby Kennedy? I thought it was fascinating in some ways that he delivered remarks that were drafted in some part by Arthur Schlesinger and approved by Burke Marshall, who was a consultant with him. But part of the reason I found it interesting was because I was reminded of the war against Iraq and the incursion into Afghanistan. In other words, it's hard to separate the politics of the time from the remarks being delivered, because Bobby Kennedy, according to what you write there, was a little concerned about the engagement there, but he didn't want to disengage too quickly, and he had been hearing rumors of that. Put that particular speech, that initial warning against a widening war, in some more context for us.
Sure, happy to do that. This speech that you're referencing was delivered in the United States Senate on May 6, 1965. So he was a very young senator. He's 5 months in the office. And the war is at a fairly critical juncture. But at the time, the vast majority of Americans still supported the administration's actions in Vietnam. And I think Robert Kennedy was trying to accomplish a number of things with this speech and also try to come up with a coherent policy that recognized that the beginnings of the commitment in Vietnam started with the Eisenhower administration, but that his brother and the administration of which he was a part had a significant role in the early days, and Kennedy acknowledged that responsibility. I think also he was trying to not break publicly with a president who didn't suffer that lightly. We have seen something of a similar approach to LBJ's of late. And Kennedy knew that if he did break publicly with the president, Johnson was not going to listen to his advice about Vietnam or anything else. So I think he was, in this speech in 65, trying to walk a pretty thin line. But it was also a very, very difficult policy issue, because there were concerns about what would accompany an American pull out, what the results would be. And there were obviously concerns, and Kennedy expressed them, about widening a commitment to a country that did not have a stable government or the support of its people. And he made it clear that if those qualities were not developed, that our efforts in Vietnam were bound to fail.
The way you write it is Bobby Kennedy didn't necessarily write every word of every speech. In fact, he, you know, would defer to others in some ways. But you say he owned every speech. Every speech that he delivered was Robert Kennedy's speech.
Yes. And Tim, you know, you point to the roots of this in a comment you made earlier about him being a writer. He started very early as a writer. In fact, our book begins with excerpts from three articles which he wrote on a byline basis for the Boston Post in 1948 in the then British Mandate territory of Palestine, months before the State of Israel was declared. And so even at the age of 22, he was dealing with significant policy issues. And indeed, his insights there are fairly breathtaking now, 70 years later. And he felt very, very comfortable with written communication. He wrote quite a number of books. And with respect to the speeches, he did go over all of his major addresses. And they, even the drafts he received, reflected the instructions he had given to his team before their drafting. So he was vitally involved from the development of a concept for a speech through the various drafts. And then I've seen, because I've had the podium copies of many of the speeches that we pull into this volume, he changed them on the fly.
You have pictures of him, like on an airplane, you know, sort of going over some of these things and editing. But actually on the stage, you're saying he actually would change the speech.
Oh, yes.
To reflect the audience.
Well, yes. I mean, you can tell, and I'm trying to remember which speech this is, and I'm going to fumble for a minute. But it was clear that this was an event that had many speakers in front of him, and the night was running long. And so he's just striking page after page of his podium copy to reflect the fact that folks want to go home. And he wants to focus on the principal message elements that he wants to deliver. And because he had been so involved in the preparation of each of these speeches, he knew what the heart was, and he zeroed right in on it and revised the writing up, sitting up on the stage. So this was a very activist speechwriter on his own behalf. And the folks who wrote speeches for him didn't have just that job duty. They, in fact, were the central policy people. Peter Edelman, Adam Walensky in the Senate years were legislative aides. These folks were deeply steeped in the process of bringing these ideas to fruition by getting legislation that incorporated them.
These are the ones who would be sitting in a room in a meeting with Bobby Kennedy, and he would say, all right, well, I got to do a speech on this. What have you been reading about this? Where am I going to come up with the next idea? Where is that going to come from?
That's right. And usually he would say, look, I want to pull this concept that we talked about in Alabama 2 months ago, and I'd like you to call this professor who's doing some interesting work in this idea, and please call so-and-so, my friend who used to be in the Kennedy administration, and pick his brains on this topic. So, you know, the speeches would start out with sourcing, with direction, with principal message points, with what he wanted to convey emotionally to that audience. And then he'd take a draft that would come back and say, this isn't exactly what I want to say here. What I really mean is more like this, and give language.
Didn't you say he also would often wind up calling that person himself by the next morning?
Yes. Yes. He had an insatiable curiosity.
Yeah. Once again, we are speaking with Rick Allen, C. Richard Allen, co-editor and introducing Edward O. Guthman. The book is RFK, His Words for Our Times. I want to touch on this one particular speech, partly because I want to ask your take on a point. The Condition of Blacks in America, Michigan State University, April 11th, 1968, where he says, at the outset, we must make it unmistakably clear, a violent few cannot be permitted to threaten the lives and well-being of the many, nor lawless gangs disrupt the peace of our cities and the hopes of their fellows for progress. But history offers cold comfort to those who think grievance and despair can be subdued by force. To understand is not to permit, but to fail to understand is the surest guarantee of a mounting strife which will assault the well-being of every citizen, and therefore The first task before us is this, an effort to understand. I bring that up because I contrast some of what Bobby Kennedy says in many of his speeches with what John F. Kennedy does. I'm sure the comparisons are natural. And I feel like in some ways, John F. Kennedy's speeches was an aspiration to something that doesn't exist. In many ways, Bobby Kennedy's speeches were an exhortation to change things now. It was almost not a lecture, but it was much more strident in tone than the sort of uplifting feeling we got from John F. Kennedy. Maybe that's a mistaken feeling, but that's what I come away with a lot of times with these speeches.
Well, consider what had happened over the ensuing 5 to 6 years, right? The first steps on civil rights legislation, begun by John Kennedy's administration and then carried forward after his death by President Johnson, allowed the legal framework for a fairer society to begin to be built. But there was still enormous dissatisfaction among the races with conditions in America. There was economic separation, and there were obviously racial separation. And I think in that same speech you cite, Kennedy concluded by saying Americans have always believed that if we faced our problems and worked at them, they could be resolved. And for the most part, they have been right. Those who now believe we have the power to do justice and to make our streets fit places where men can live and children play in tranquility are also right. And I think that that message of reconciliation and hard work was a consistent part of Robert Kennedy's belief about how you made change and a reflection that 1968 was just a very different time than 1962 or 63.
The last words spoken by Bobby Kennedy, obviously the night the assassination were, it was after a victory, a very close victory, as it turned out, in California. We are a great country, an unselfish country, and a compassionate country, and I intend to make that my basis for running over the period of the next few months. So my thanks to all of you, and it's on to Chicago, and let's win there. And obviously, he never got the chance to go on there. It did seem to many people, and I'd like to get your take on this, Rick, is that he was starting to hit his stride as a candidate at that point. In other words, he had become more of his own person as opposed to being the brother of John F. Kennedy. What was your take on that?
Absolutely correct. I think it was very difficult for Robert Kennedy to move from the role in which he was so comfortable, which was being his brother's counselor and defender, to into the role of being principal himself. As we've discussed, he wasn't a natural public speaker. He felt uncomfortable about it. But he also, to some extent, really didn't want the spotlight. He didn't want to be named attorney general, among other things. And so in the months and essentially year after his brother's murder, in that grief, he had to think about how he was going to continue to move forward as a person and what kind of contribution he wanted to make. That ultimately moved him into the role of being a candidate and running for the Senate. But through that whole campaign period and the years in the Senate, he was still feeling his way into this new role. I agree with you that as the campaign progressed, he became more and more comfortable in that role, and he really allowed himself to express the passion and sense of what America could be powerfully in a way that would have been very difficult for him to do in earlier years.
I can tell you, I'm not sure. I was going to ask you if you had a favorite. I remember the 1964 convention. Yes, I was young, but I remember not so much the speech, but the fact that he had a hard time getting to deliver it because it was Mr. Chairman, and the applause, the ovation was forever. Yeah. But he was still John F. Kennedy's brother. And I wonder, though, did you have a favorite, any of these that really sticks out to you as being most important or favorite of all?
Well, you know, this is asking the kind of Sophie's choice. I love all of my children. But I would say to you, I think the best single speech was the Day of Affirmation speech in Cape Town on June 6th in 1966. The kind of best two-speech combo is the April 4th extempore remarks in Indianapolis that you mentioned on the death of Martin Luther King, and then the prepared speech the very next day in Cleveland mm-hmm. on the mindless menace of violence. And I'd say probably the best paragraph is this one, which is from a speech before the Citizens Union in New York City in December 1967. Kennedy said, "It is not easy to know what it means to be an American. But in part, to be an American means to have been an outcast and a stranger, to have come to the exile's country, and to know that he who denies the outcast and stranger still amongst us, he also denies America."
Powerful, powerful words. RFK, his words for our times is the book. Last question, and I, you know, this is going to be another tough one, and that is John F. Kennedy, great speeches. Edward Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, delivered some pretty powerful speeches too. Bobby Kennedy, speeches. More on policy maybe than some of the other things. Is there a way to rank them, 1, 2, 3?
Oh, you know, I've never really thought about that. I was always most drawn to Robert Kennedy. Part of it was my age and the confluence of when he was kind of at his height. But I started working as a volunteer as a kid for him, and I worked with his brother Edward Kennedy as well, and obviously admired the president. I was way too young to have any kind of direct sense of him. They're all great speakers. They're all similar but different, and they're all important leaders.
We will leave it at that. A fascinating collection of the speeches, commentary, and context, all part of it. RFK, his words for our times, edited, introduced by Edwin O. Guthman and C. Richard Allen. Rick Allen has been with us on POTUS. Rick, I appreciate it. Thanks for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Tim. It was a great honor.
Rick Allen, who tweets, by the way, at C. Richard Allen.